Okay. We're gonna get started here with Ford Motor Company next. We're very pleased to have Ford's Joe Hinrichs with us today. Joe was Ford's Global Manufacturing Chief until being named Head of Asia Pacific and Africa in December of 2009. We think it's a testament to Joe's importance within the company that he was chosen to lead Ford through the largest Asian expansion in the company's history. Just for everybody's background, Ford announced plans to expand Asian capacity from about 900,000 units in 2011 to 2.3 million units by 2015. The success of that plan is key to the company's long-term margin targets of 8%-9% from the mid-fives in 2011, and it's certainly critical to the company's overall growth. I think I'm flipping through your slide deck as I'm going through that, so I apologize. Ford is currently trading at 2.5x our 2012 EBITDA estimate and 2.4x our 2013. Our $18 target is based on a DCF model. It calibrates for about a 4.8x EV to EBITDA multiple. With that, I'd like to extend a warm welcome to Joe Hinrichs.
All right. Thanks, Rod, and good afternoon, everyone, both joining us here today in Chicago and if you're on the webcast as well. As Rod discussed, I'm gonna talk a little bit about Ford's growth plans in Asia Pacific and Africa. Let's start out, though, by, as we always do, the fundamental plan for Ford has not changed under the One Ford plan led by our CEO, Alan Mulally, since he joined the company back in 2006. This is the four tenets of that plan. They haven't changed. The bottom line is really what I wanna focus on, and that is profitable growth for all. In the auto industry, a lot of the growth is occurring in Asia Pacific and Africa. Why even back in 2007, when I think this slide first came about, you'll see that Asia Pacific and Africa was always the biggest part of that pie when it comes to global volume in that bottom left. Our plan hasn't changed. It's all about products, a strong business, and a better world, and serving the major markets, including the BRIC markets. We'll talk a little about India and China as part of Asia Pacific and Africa. Focusing on the Ford and Lincoln brands and the full lineup of vehicles, and then quality, green, safe, and smart, and best value. The plan deliverables haven't changed either, about improving the time to market, having the freshest showroom in the industry, et cetera. You'll note on the bottom there, this has been our plan for several years, return to investment grade. Of course, we're very proud of the fact that's occurred in the last couple of months, and we've got the Blue Oval back. We're excited about that. About a year ago, Alan and the team talked about our mid-decade outlook and taking our wholesale to about 8 million units, improving the revenue and pricing, and having automotive margins both in North America and globally in the 8%-10% range. Our capital spending about $6 billion a year and a target of total automotive debt around $10 billion, coming off a high in the 30s, as you recall, a few years ago. Achieving investment grade and maintaining it through the cycle and then paying dividends as a percent of after-tax earnings. The mid-decade outlook hasn't changed, and we're on plan to deliver that. A big part of that plan is about the global platform strategy under the One Ford plan and platform consolidation, increasing scale. Now, these are the five kind of global platform, large global platforms that we're working on, in the segment size B, C, CD, compact pickup globally, and the commercial van. You'll see that by the middle of the decade, the B and C segment global platforms will have each over 2 million units. Even the CD segment, which is the new Fusion Mondeo coming at us shortly, which received such great accolades at Detroit Show, over 1 million units. We're in the middle of the Ranger launch globally, which will give us over 225,000 units, and then the commercial van segment. The bottom line here, 85% of our volume on nine core platforms by 2013, and a very important part of enabling us to take advantage of the global platforms to achieve scale and return better margins to our business. All right, that's the backdrop, the foundations of the Ford plan, which haven't changed. Now let's talk a little bit about what's going on in what we call Asia Pacific and Africa, or APA. It's not a surprise to all of you that are here today, but we are in a growth industry, and that we lose sight of that sometimes with what's going on in the auto industry. The pie chart you see here on the represents the size of the global auto industry. So in 2000, our industry was 58 million units globally, and China was just 2 million units. Wasn't that long ago. In 2011, last year, the global industry was 79 million units, and China was, this rounds up to 19, is about 18 and a half. But 24% of the global industry. That APA was 40% of the global industry in 2011 versus 20% in 2000. You can see the dramatic growth in that part of the world. And then, and this is a Global Insights forecast for 2020, an industry of 112 million units globally, and China representing nearly 30% of that at 32 million. And you can see the red kind of color there, that Asia, Pacific, and Africa will be nearly 50% of the global auto industry by the end of the decade. This is 46%. And most of the growth on a volume basis is occurring in Asia, Pacific, and Africa. So you have to compete there on scale to have a global business, which is what we intend to do. Let's break it down a little bit further. Again, this is Global Insight data, and this gives you a sense for what's really happening. China at a little less than 19 million last year, going to 32 million in 2020. India over 3 million last year, going to 7 million in 2020. We think that could be even a little bit bigger than that. And then the ASEAN 5, which are Thailand, Indonesia, Malaysia, Philippines, and Vietnam, going to 4 million. These are important three locations because you'll see this lines up nicely with our manufacturing hub strategy for Asia, Pacific, and Africa. But China leads the growth. You can see it's not only the largest market in the world, it's the largest growth market in the world still today. So what's driving all this growth? Well, this is a chart we've used many times before, but perhaps you haven't seen it, and that is all the markets around the world behave in similar ways. When people reach a certain economic income level on a purchasing parity basis, the auto industry reaches what's called a takeoff stage, and people want to buy the freedom of their own transportation. It's about $5,000 to $6,000 U.S. on a per capita basis, purchasing parity basis. And this chart shows you that between China, India, and ASEAN, the five big markets in ASEAN, that there'll be 2 billion people by 2020 who are of driving age and have reached that economic income level. Now, the numbers that you've seen previously on the industry forecast assume that about 2% of those people buy a vehicle every year. We've never seen this many people come into this kind of economic level before to be able to have the freedom to buy and the affordability to buy a vehicle. That's what's driving a lot of the growth. And that's what's been driving the growth in the last decade in Asia, Pacific, and Africa, because the Tier 1 and Tier 2 cities in India started to reach that takeoff stage, and the Tier 1 and Tier 2 and 3 cities in China reached that takeoff stage, and you saw a steep acceleration curve of the markets in both those areas. So this just gives you a sense, like everything in Asia, the law of big numbers. 2 billion potential customers, you don't need very many of them to buy a car to have a large industry. And because of that, first-time buyers dominate. This is very important to Ford because we're slightly under 3% market share in the region, but we get to compete with 60 to 70% of the buyers in these key markets are all first-time buyers. So with our new product portfolio strategy coming online, we get a chance to compete with the first-time buyers on equal footing with everyone else. And that's very important and very different than the Western markets like the United States and Europe, where people traditionally have families that have bought vehicles over years or their own experiences. These are first-time buyers who want value, they want new technology, they want the strength of an international brand, and of course they want all the latest in smart technologies. So let's talk about what we're doing and what our growth plan is. This was developed back in 2009, but I think it's still relevant to Asia, Pacific, and Africa, and that is two key things. Build the Ford brand in this part of the world and improve the business model. And by building the Ford brand, it's really about extending the core product portfolio. You'll see very shortly here that one of the reasons why we have the market share we have in Asia today is because we don't have the product portfolio breadth that our competition has, or even that we have in most of the other parts of the world. We're going to fix that over the next several years. Leverage the global platforms and the scale of Ford, the One Ford strategy to do that. Improve the brand experience, largely by adding to our distribution network in a great scale, because we do not have the kind of numbers of dealers you'd expect. Again, that's tied also to the products. And then manufacturing source at scale and increase our manufacturing capacity significantly in three key manufacturing hubs, China, India, and Thailand. Thailand for the ASEAN market and beyond. So this gives you a little sense for the market in China. The bars the outline bars represent the size of the segmentation of the industry in China. The horizontal line represents a breakpoint about $14,500, which 30% of the market's above that and 70% of the volume's below that price point in China. So if you can see, the blue is where we currently compete in China today. Only five products, Ford brand products, okay, and they're all in the upper band of the price range as far as in the higher content, higher cost, higher revenue points. We announced the Beijing show. We have three more SUVs coming within 12 months, and that's the Explorer as an import, and then locally manufactured the Kuga and the EcoSport. But you can see there's a lot of open space here for the Ford brand to play. And without revealing the rest of our cycle plan, because we said we'd bring 15 new vehicles to the market by 2015, the first three of those are listed in the Explorer, Kuga, EcoSport, and then the new Focus, which we just launched recently. So four of the 15 have been announced. You can appreciate the fact that in order to raise our market share and to gain volume, we need to play in the spaces where the volume is, and we need to play in both the value proposition end of the segmentation as well as the higher end. And that's the plan. So you can see that if you add 11 more products, if you will, to this chart, you can see that we can start to begin to play in some high volume spaces and gather more volume and gain our market share. Of course, we need the manufacturing capacity and the dealers to make that happen, which has to all coincide together. This is the same chart for India. We've had some success growing our market share in India the last couple of years. In fact, in 2010, we were named Manufacturer of the Year in India and won every single Car of the Year award when the Figo was launched. But we only have three products in the showroom in India today. And we announced the EcoSport, which is a B-size SUV, is coming to the market early next year. But we also said that we'll bring eight new vehicles to the market by the middle of the decade. So we have a lot of opportunity, especially in the value end of the proposition, the sub-BB, to be able to play with more product to gain market share. The next slide here represents ASEAN, a key focus for us with our new manufacturing plant in Thailand. You'll see here also that we had really five core products in the portfolio. We've announced the EcoSports coming in the early part of next year. You can see also where there's great opportunity on B cars and MAVs, for example, where the volume is to be able to participate with our global platforms. We also announced we'll have eight new products coming to ASEAN by the middle of the decade, with the EcoSport being the second one after Ranger of the eight. So there's a lot of product to come in the next 3 years. That's the bottom line. And you can see, you can start to predict where the areas might be where we can grow our business. But let's talk about what we're doing to prove that we're on our path to get there. In February, we opened up the second assembly plant in Chongqing and added the capacity there of 150,000 units initially. We'll grow that capacity over time. But that was a significant investment that just opened up to launch the new Focus in China, which we started selling last month. This is the new Thailand facility that we just built, and we opened up in Rayong, Thailand. This also makes the new Focus. We haven't started shipping those yet to dealers, but we will soon. And this is also another new plant that's in conjunction with our strategy to have capacity in Thailand to support the ASEAN market. A beautiful new plant, which gives us more capacity in Thailand. And unlike our other capacity in Thailand, this is wholly owned by Ford. The other plant we have in Thailand is a joint venture with Mazda that makes the Rangers and the Fiestas. Here's a new engine plant being built in Chongqing to launch next year. $500 million investment, $400,000. It's hard to get a clear day picture in Chongqing, but you can see the plant being built. Same with the new transmission plant. It opens in 2013, $350 million investment, 400,000 units of capacity there as well. It's all happening as we speak. Here's our new assembly plant being built for the JMC brand, which is our indigenous truck brand in China, in Nanchang in Jiangxi province. And this is a $300 million investment, opens next year, 300,000 units of capacity. So you can see there's a number of plants being opened next year. And this is our new assembly plant being built in Sanand, Gujarat in India. This assembly plant opens in 2014. It's a $1 billion investment between the assembly plant and the engine plant, with an additional capacity of 240,000 units, so that's going on. There's a site being prepared for the new engine plant, which will also launch in 2014. And then here's the announcements we made a couple months ago, where we're now going to start building a third assembly plant in Chongqing, while also expanding the new plant we just opened by another 100,000 units. This will open in late 2014, so another assembly plant being built in China. And this is the other assembly plant we announced we're going to build in China, in Hangzhou, in Zhejiang province, that opens in early 2015. So I ran through those very quickly, but you can see that there's an engine plant, transmission plant, and a vehicle plant opening up next year in China. We just opened up a new assembly plant in China and Thailand each this year. In 2014, we have an assembly plant opening in Chongqing, China, and assembly plant opening in Sanand, Gujarat, in India, and then we have early 2015 an assembly plant opening in Hangzhou, in China. So you add all that together, you can see there's a lot of capacity coming online, and this gives you a little feel for that. Now, this is new news in how it builds, but essentially last year we had about 1.5 million units of capacity in Asia, Pacific, and Africa. And by 2015, when all those plants open, we'll have just shy under 3 million units of capacity, the 2.9 million units of capacity, to support, during that time period, the 50 new vehicles and powertrains that we will launch in these facilities during that time period. An unprecedented amount of growth for Ford and the largest industrial expansion that we've had in Ford since the 50s. And you can see the scale of what's happening both in China, but also in India and Thailand and throughout the region. Now, we have products planned to support this volume growth, capacity growth. The plants are being built, and now it's about developing the products, building the plants, getting them launched on time, and adding the dealers. Because to support all this volume growth and this capacity coming online, we need to be able to have the dealer network support that. And this gives you a sense for the dealership network growth that's occurring in the three key areas I just talked about, China, India, and ASEAN. In China, for example, we've been adding over 100 dealers a year since 2009, which is more than two a week on average. India, we've been averaging about one every 10 days, and you can see we'll more than double the dealership count from 11 to 15 in India. And in ASEAN, we're adding roughly 100 dealers between now and 2015, and significant dealership growth in China. So, all kinds of manufacturing capacity being built, 50 new vehicles and powertrains being developed to launch in the next 4 years, and dealership network doubling in many cases throughout the region, all coming together to allow us to grow our volume and our share. But let's talk about how we do that. First off, I showed you that we have five products for sale in China today, five nameplates, which is not a lot for the world's largest market, and we're going to fix that over the next several years. However, when you break it down by segment share in China, most of our products that we sell in China actually do very well in the segments they compete in. We only have five of them. But on the Fiesta, for Ford internally, we break up China because it's so big, especially in the B&C segments. We break up the segments between high, mid, and low. Typically, the international brands compete on the high end and in the mid segment, usually legacy products, and the low end revenue points, typically indigenous brands or really old legacy product. And the Ford global products that we've launched so far have largely competed in the high-end space. So on the B-car high-end, Fiesta gets over 10% of the segment share. On the high-end compact car, Focus gets over 10% share. In fact, Focus is the top 10 selling car in China for the last several years. And then even the Mondeo in the large car segment that's not used for business. So a driver's car is actually number four with over 10% share. And the Transit van, which is not shown on here, is a segment leader in the van segment in China. If you're ever over there, you'll see lots of Transits running around. So if we're getting 10%+ share in the subsegments in China, if you can add more product, obviously if you get that kind of share, the market share will grow, and that's the plan, to add those 15 new products to the portfolio, including adding the JMC products as well as we go forward. Now let's talk about India and Thailand as two other examples of recent launches, because we have a lot of launches coming in the next several years. I want to build some confidence that we can gain share. In India, in March 2010, we launched the Figo. Before that, we had a 4% segment share in the largest segment of the industry called the B segment in India. After the Figo launch in 2010, we had a 10% share of that segment, which is the largest segment in India, and our overall share of India total went from 1% to 3% in 1 year with one product. Remember, we have eight new products coming to India by the middle of the decade. All right. In Thailand, for example, last year we launched the Fiesta, which is a car that's familiar to most people around the world. We launched the Fiesta, and we went from basically nothing in the B segment to getting to over 10% share of the B segment. And our share of the overall Thai industry went from 2% to 4%. Again, one product, eight products being launched between now and mid-decade in ASEAN. Just to give you a sense for the opportunity that the Ford brand has in these countries as we grow the portfolio and in the manufacturing capacity. The Ranger's being launched as we speak now. It's a hit. We can't build enough. We've had supply constraints hit us. Lately, the last several weeks, we've been making our production, and we're really excited about the rest of the year with the Ranger launch. We're launching the new Focus as we speak. We started selling it last month in China, and we started selling it in the second half of the year in ASEAN at our new plant in Thailand. We've received lots of accolades for the Focus in that part of the world as well. And then the EcoSport comes in the first part of next year. We launched the EcoSport globally at the Delhi show the first week of January. Alan was there with myself. And all week long, there was a 200-meter-long queue to get in to see this car. And we actually had to shut our show stand down, turn the lights off, cover all the vehicles to get people to leave to let more people in almost every hour on the show. That's the kind of hit this product was at the show and will be, we think, when it launches in the marketplace. And then the Kuga, which is the international version of the Escape, comes next in China as well, being built locally in a very important segment, the C-segment SUV. So to summarize, key takeaways, the industry is going to grow from 32 million last year to roughly 50 million plus in 2020 in Asia, Pacific, and Africa, representing nearly half the global automotive industry and over 60% of the growth this decade. We're building nine plants, just launched two of them this year, seven more to launch between now and early 2015, 50 new vehicle and powertrain launches throughout the region, capacity grows to 2.9 million units. We double the number of dealerships based from 2010 to 2015 in the region. We continue to rely on our partners in China and our JVs with Chang'an and Zhongling Motors. And importantly, by the middle of the decade, the profitable value vehicles will be a foundation of the APA's success, competing in the spaces that you can see on the value segmentation. And our business in APA will be a significant contributor to Ford's profitability when all that capacity and all that product comes online by the middle of the decade. That's it for my presentation. Now I'd like to open up for Q&A. Thank you. Rod?
Thanks for that presentation. I guess my primary question is there are many manufacturers that are pursuing growth in the China market right now, and there are public stats on the trajectory of growth of capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And at least in the very short run, with a little bit of a moderation of growth in China at the moment, it looks like maybe growth in supply may exceed growth in demand. I'm wondering whether you guys question at all what the profitability of that is going to be and how you sort of see pricing evolving in this intermediate term over the next couple of years.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, clearly, since the spring of last year, the Chinese industry has slowed down the rate of growth. The Chinese government took some pretty strong actions last spring, a year ago, based on what was happening with inflation and other things. And we saw the industry slow down. And we have seen some increased incentives and the inventories rise in the last 6 months or so as a result of that slowing rate of growth. It's still growing. It's still a big market and still becoming bigger. So we are seeing some of that. I think from our standpoint, it's one of the reasons why I kind of showed where we compete today and what segments share we have. The Ford brand is strong. International brands are strong. They're continuing to be strong in the Chinese market. If you look at it takes a lot more to get approval for capacity for the joint ventures than it does for the indigenous brands in China. So there are some mechanisms that have kind of put some constraints on the time it takes to get capacity approved in China on the JVs. So I think the JVs are in a pretty good shape when it comes to capacity, because the time to negotiate with the partner and negotiate with governments and get the approval of the NDRC and everything else takes time, whereas you'll see some overcapacity in some of the Chinese brands playing out in the marketplace. We're very bullish on the long-term potential of the Ford brand and in the industry in China. It is getting more competitive, though, but it's a profitable market, and we believe it will continue to be so, and it's an attractive market because the segments that are growing are places like SUVs, premium segments, and higher technology vehicles, like the EcoBoost Mondeo was a great seller for us. So we're seeing the kind of market you'd like to see for growth in the future. Thanks. Next question. Back there.
So when you showed the white space on where you could potentially launch products, it seems like a lot of the potential is in the lower end of the market. So how do you do that without diluting the Ford brand and the premium that you can achieve today in those products?
Yeah, you're right. And we've said publicly that we expect the value end products to be a great opportunity for the Ford brand. If you think about it, the Figo in India was a great example of it's priced around $8,000 or thereabouts. And we got a lot of share quickly with the Ford branded product. It still had differentiated driving dynamics, still had the safety expectations we'd have, and it had Bluetooth and some other capabilities that were important to the Ford brand. We believe very strongly that we can leverage the global platforms that we have, get further cost out, and provide value products to India, Thailand, Indonesia, China, et cetera, that still are true to Ford DNA, but for that segment are overly competitive in what they offer for value proposition, but aren't a global focus with the higher content and the technology and the cost with the great first car. And we've seen that play out with the Figo and in some cases the Fiesta. And we want to leverage that, especially that B car platform that we've developed to have multiple products that can compete for the first time buyers at a lower price point and introduce them to the Ford brand, but still be differentiated enough. That's the key, is to still have differentiation. And the opportunity we have, of course, is to leverage our scale globally. And not just saying that, but the same products can be meaningful to the customer in South America, Eastern Europe, Africa, Asia Pacific. So we have the opportunity to do that, and that's the great success we intend to have with the global platforms that we didn't have historically, which is one of the reasons why we had relatively limited amount of product in Asia Pacific, because we didn't have the global platforms, and therefore we were picking off a Europe product typically, which was a higher cost. But now we have a great opportunity to leverage those global platforms. Thanks. You want the next question? Rod has another one.
Just thinking, from your perspective as former head of global manufacturing, you probably saw a lot of the benefits down the road of the global platforms. Are there disadvantages as well in terms of being able to customize the vehicles and some of these markets and tastes and compromises that you need to make? And also, if you think about another question that we had was just thinking about the challenges kind of globally for the auto industry. There's some markets where you've got tremendous growth, and there's other markets where costs are relatively high, and actually there's plenty of overcapacity by any measure.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the sort of composition of Ford's global manufacturing base might change significantly in the future, such that you might be able to rationalize some capacity in markets where you've got too much, and maybe use markets like China, low cost base, and things like that, which are already using products that you're selling globally, using those as an export base?
I actually don't think our manufacturing base will change too dramatically. Ford historically has had a point of view of manufacturing where we sell, as long as you can get scale. And the size of our company allows us to get scale in most of the key markets where we have core manufacturing. We have, within Asia Pacific and Africa, consolidated the large volume opportunities really to India, China, and Thailand, even though we still have manufacturing in South Africa and Vietnam and in Australia and many other places, Taiwan, et cetera. The key thing, I think, is that leveraging the global platforms allows us to also have a supply base that's global. And as we've seen recently with the tsunami and earthquake in Japan and the floods in Thailand, it's nice to have that same product with that same supplier being manufactured in more than one location throughout the world, because we've been able to take advantage of that. For example, in the Thai flood situation, the Fiesta is manufactured in Thailand and in China, and we were short of supply in Thailand from Fiesta suppliers, but we had a Fiesta suppliers in China making the same part. We were able to supplement for a while the capacity
that was a great opportunity for us when you have a natural disaster. Hopefully it won't happen anymore, but you never know when that occurs. There's no question that for us, leveraging the global platforms and the process standardization that comes with that for the manufacturing plants is a big benefit. And we like to get to the point where we can actually have our capacity utilized in such that if we need extra capacity in certain locations, we can supplement it from somewhere else, but the core strategy being manufacturing largely where we sell. I think that will continue to be the case. So I don't see a big change in the manufacturing strategy as we move forward. The big opportunity, of course, is that growing our business so substantially in Asia Pacific allows us to have a lot more capacity in the lower cost part of the world, especially a place like India. And you do learn things that you can transfer across the globe in doing business in places like India and in Western Central China and et cetera, from a cost standpoint that is very meaningful. For example, the FIGO program that was done in India was the foundation for our value-enabled strategy for our global platforms, because we took a lot of those learnings from that FIGO platform and then cascaded them to what we're going to do on our B and C platforms around the world. And I think that's one of the benefits we get from having a much larger product portfolio and manufacturing base in Asia Pacific looking forward. But it's a supplementary benefit to our core global platform strategy. Yeah, the question is on, are there disadvantages? I wouldn't say there are any key disadvantages. It does link us together globally. So you don't have the freedom, let's say, to make an independent decision on a product if you're tied in globally, because we're all sharing in the costs, and the timing is lined up with everybody's plans, whether it be North America, South America, Europe, or Asia Pacific and Africa. But we learn how to operate in that environment as a global team, because when we spend so much time together. But the ability to tweak 10 to 20% of the product for the market and all the research we do allows us, the freedom to do what we need to do for the customer. For example, the new Escape is being launched here in North America. It's a great product, and it's a great product, important product for us. We'll launch that early part of next year as a Kuga in China, for example. In our research, we found that the core vehicle, the size, the interior dimensions, the styling, everything, did really well in China. But the Chinese customers, because it's an SUV at a higher-end price segment, wanted more chrome details. They wanted some more details around the front headlamps, some things like that. Well, those things we easily were able to accommodate once we did the research. And so the Chinese Kuga will have a little more chrome and some more details, which adds a little bit of cost, but it's an SUV on a premium price segment that's different. But the core platform, the core seat architecture, the instrument panel architecture, you know, is all the same. So we have not found many disadvantages. On all our global platforms, for all the key markets, we do a lot of research on design, on cost, on content. And it really is amazing to see the convergence. Even markets like China and United States and Germany and the UK are all converging in what their wants are from a technology and a styling standpoint. Any other further questions? There's one, yeah.
As you build out the product offerings and the value price points, how should we look at margins for those new entry, new products?
Yes, well, I'll look at it in a couple of different ways. First off, lower revenue product, and especially like the B segment size, the margins are smaller typically on average than they are on larger vehicles around the world. You can look at it from that end of the scale. On the other end, because we're doing business in places like India, ASEAN, China, the fixed cost structure is also lower. So the margins from a contribution margin will be lower, but the fixed cost structure will be lower in that part of the world, number one. And number two, because so much of our volume is coming through joint ventures, that also helps with the fixed cost structure and the cost structure that occurs in our business. So on balance, we think it's still a very attractive business proposition, especially with the volume opportunity that's there to supplement the rest of the world, but also for Asia Pacific. So that's the way I would look at it. There's pluses and minuses that go with the smaller vehicles. There's a lot of volume. There's a lot of scale. The fixed cost structure is lower, but the contribution margin on average is smaller than what you'd see in mid and larger size vehicles around the world. Okay? Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you all for coming this afternoon.